Angus Greer had come to Yorkshire 30 years ago, a penniless Scot just like myself, and acquired a lucrative practice by the classical expedient of marrying the boss's daughter. So he got a good living handed to him on a plate, but he also got Mrs. Greer. It seemed to me that she felt that she was still in charge, probably because she had always lived in this house with its memories of her father who had built up the practice. Other people would seem like interlopers, and I could understand how she felt. After all, she was childless. She didn't have much of a life, and she had Angus Greer for a husband. I could feel sorry for her. But that didn't help because I just couldn't get her out of my hair. She hung over my every move like a disapproving spectre. When I came back from a round, she was always there with a barrage of questions.
Where have you been all this time?
Or,
I wondered wherever you got to, where you lost.
Or,
there's an urgent case waiting, why are you always so slow?
Maybe she thought I'd nipped into a cinema for an hour or two. There was a pretty full small animal surgery every night, and she had a nasty habit of lurking just outside the door so that she could listen to what I was saying to the clients. She really came into her own in the dispensary, where she watched me narrowly, criticizing my prescriptions and constantly pulling me up for being extravagant with the drugs.
You're putting in far too much chlorodyne. Don't you know it's very expensive?
I developed a deep sympathy for the assistants who had fled without warning. Jobs were hard to come by, and young graduates would stand nearly anything just to be at work. But I realized that there had been no other choice for that shadowy figure. Adamson's place was a small holding on the edge of the town, and maybe it was because I had just been looking at Greer, but by contrast, the farmer's lined, patient face and friendly eyes seemed extraordinarily warming and attractive. A ragged khaki smock hung loosely on his gaunt frame as he shook hands with me.
Now then! We've got a new man today, have we?
He looked me over for a second or two.
And by the look of you, you're pretty fresh at job.
That's right, I replied. But I'm learning fast. Mr. Adamson smiled.
Don't worry about that, lad. I believe in new blood and new ideas. It's what we want in farming. We've stood still too long in this game. Come in to buy it and I'll show you the cow.
There were about a dozen cows, not the usual shorthorns, but Ayrshires, and they were obviously well-kept and healthy. My patient was easy to pick out by the football-sized, rose-pink protrusion of the vaginal wall and the corrugated uterine cervix. But the farmer had wasted no time in calling for assistance. The mass was clean and undamaged. He watched me attentively as I swabbed the prolapse with antiseptic and pushed it back out of sight. Then he helped me build a platform with soil and planks for the cow's hind feet. When we'd finished, she was standing on a slope with her tail higher than her head.
And you say that if I give her linseed oil for a few days, that thing won't come out again?
Well, that's the idea, I said. Be sure to keep her built up like this.
I will, young man, and thank you very much. I'm sure you've done a good job for me. I'll be looking forward to seeing you again.
Back in the car, I groaned to myself. Good job. How the hell could that thing stay in without stitches? But I had to do as I was told, and Greer, even if he was unpleasant, wasn't a complete fool. Maybe he was right. I put it out of my mind and got on with the other visits. It was less than a week later at the breakfast table, and I was prodding at the inevitable porridge when Greer, who had ventured downstairs, barked suddenly at me.
I've got a card here for Adamson. He says he's not satisfied with your work. We'd better get out there this morning and see what's wrong. I didn't like these complaints.
His normal expression of being perpetually offended deepened, and the big pale eyes swam and brimmed till I was sure he was going to weep in his porridge. At the farm, Mr. Adamson led us into the byre.
Well, what do you think of that, young man?
I looked at the prolapse and my stomach lurched. The innocuous-looking pink projection had been transformed into a great, bloated, purple mass. It was caked with filth, and an ugly wound ran down one side of it.
It didn't stay in very long, did it?
The farmer said quietly. I was too ashamed to speak.
This was a dreadful thing to do to a good cow. I felt my face reddening, but luckily I had my employer with me. He would be able to explain everything. I turned towards Greer, who snuffled, mumbled, blinked his eyes rapidly, but didn't say anything. The farmer went on. "And you see, she's damaged it. Must have caught it on something. I'll tell you, I don't like the look of it." It was against this decent man's nature to be unpleasant, but he was upset all right. "Maybe it would be better if you could take the job on this dime, Mr. Greer," he said. Greer, who had still not uttered an intelligible word, now sprang into action. He clipped the hair over the base of the spine, inserted an epidural anesthetic, washed and disinfected the mass, and with an effort pushed it back into its place. Then he fastened it in with several strong retention sutures, with little one-inch length of rubber tubing to stop them cutting into the flesh. The finished job looked neat and workmanlike. The farmer took me gently by the shoulder. "Now that's something like. You can see it's not going to come out again, can't you? Why didn't you do something like that when you came before?" I turned again to Greer, but this time he was seized by a violent fit of coughing. I continued to stare at him, but when he still said nothing, I turned and walked out of the bar. "No hard feelings, though, young man," Mr. Adamson called after me. "I reckon we've all got to learn, and there's no substitute for experience." "That's so, Mr. Greer, isn't it?"
"Aye, oh, aye. That's right enough. Aye, aye, rightly so. Rightly so, there's no doubt about that,"
Greer mumbled. We got into the car. I settled down and waited for some explanation from him. I was interested to know just what he would say. But the blue-veined nose pointed straight ahead, and the bulging eyes fixed themselves blankly on the road ahead of us. We drove back to the surgery in silence.